Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Gabe, how many times do I have to call you? His mom yelled up the stairs. Came the reply through Gabe's bedroom door. In a minute. Gabe's mom returned to the foot of the steps 15 minutes later, when her 13-year-old son again failed to appear. What are you doing up there? Maybe we should just unplug the computer. From a parent's perspective, what is appropriate computer use for our children? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. We are lucky to have with us today two guests who have been focusing on this particular issue from different angles. Dr. Benson Foreman is a psychologist in private practice in the Washington, D.C. area, specializing in families and children. He has two sons, one in middle school and one in high school. We're so glad you could join us today, Ben.
Glad to be here.
Joan Allman is the U.S. Coordinator for Alliance for Childhood, a partnership of individuals and organizations who are committed to children's healthy development. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Joan.
Thank you so much.
Ben, our society places great value on computer skills. What issues do you see when kids are first exposed to computers?
For some parents, I think there's a fear that if I don't get my child on the computer soon, he's going to fall behind. Mm-hmm. And there's a feeling that, you know, I want him to have every advantage to do as well as possible in school. So let me get a computer to get things rolling. And I guess my thought is that if we want our kids to succeed and to do well in school, the real key is not that they be computer competent, but the real issue is that they feel good about themselves. And that's going to happen in the context of their emotional development, of having chances to engage creatively, imaginatively, their connections with their parents, with their friends, with their community. What are the values we're teaching? If a child feels strong and confident in himself, whether he learns a computer at 10 or never sees a computer until he's 20, I don't think that's going to make the difference. But it's from that fear, which I think is media and commercially driven, that pushes some of our buttons as parents say, I don't want to fall behind. But I don't really think that's the issue.
I think a lot of parents listening are going to identify with that big time.
I think the problem comes when the computer becomes used really as a crutch, as a way to sort of fend off dealing with the issues that really they don't want to be thinking about. You know, you can plug into the computer. In some ways, the world disappears. You know, as the example that Sandy gave a minute ago, here's a child who sort of gets lost in his own world. The world disappears. I see kids come to my office. They're staying up late at night. They can be working late into the night, 2 a.m. before they get off the computer. Parents coming in back and forth trying to get their children off the computer. Parents set some limit on the computer, and suddenly the kids getting more into a more natural rhythm, suddenly falling asleep at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock.
What kinds of issues could they be retreating from? The parents want to be aware of?
I think that one of the issues that is probably one of the bigger issues has to do with the issue around social relations and peer relations. And I think it's a significant issue, again, not just in relation to the computer, but I think it's a larger cultural issue that our lives are so busy. Busy as parents, you know, we're all engaged doing many things is we have two working parents. The kids are engaged in activities going from the baseball to the
music
lessons or whatever it's going to be. And the chance for just open creative play, there's not really a lot of time for that. So I think for these kids, it's an easy way to retreat.
Yes, I think that what we've seen in children now, and my background was as a kindergarten teacher, but I've talked with many experts in the field about computer use. And what we're seeing in children is several different problems. One, there are physical risks that are generally not identified. Eye doctors are telling us they see far more eye strain in young children than they ever saw before. And neurologists are saying they're seeing carpal tunnel syndrome and other forms of repetitive strain injury in children, and sometimes very severely.
Joan, would you clarify carpal tunnel syndrome?
Yes. Carpal tunnel syndrome is a form of repetitive strain injury. And it happens in the wrist. There's a little tunnel there that a lot of nerves go through. And if one is using the computer too much or using it in the wrong positions or using a mouse in the wrong way, these nerves become quite inflamed. And it's a problem for a lot of adults who work in offices, and they wear splints on their wrists to give more support. Journalists have a big problem with this. So physical difficulties are one thing. Then we're seeing a lot of the social difficulties that Ben is describing, youngsters who are sort of turning away from life, so to speak, and focusing very much on the screen. And one has to realize that American children now, on average, spend 4 3/4 hours a day in front of screens, outside of school.
That's television screens, video game screens, computer screens.
Exactly. The full group. Right. So, frankly, I don't see how any child can have a healthy social life if outside school they're spending almost 5 hours a day sitting still in front of a screen. And the sitting still is an issue because the Surgeon General says this is the most sedentary generation America's ever had. It's the most obese generation America's ever had. And for the first time, one is seeing type 2 diabetes in children, which has always been linked with adulthood and sedentary lifestyle and diet and so on. It's becoming a problem in childhood now. One more thing I'd like to say is intellectually, there's a huge assumption that computers are going to help children with learning. And that's why we're spending $8 billion a year at this point putting computers into schools. However, the research does not support that. The research shows at an elementary school level almost no gains for children through computer use. Mm,
that's a pretty dramatic statement.
Yeah. It's a very dramatic statement, and it was made for us by Larry Cuban at Stanford University, the education department, who is a former head of the American Educational Research Association. So he knows educational research very well, and computer research has been a special area of his. And he says, when you look at all of the serious research, and of course there's a lot of research out there that was funded by computer corporations that is not taken to be very serious research by serious researchers. But when you look at the real research, the only gains that he has seen are very small gains on some standardized tests through what are called drill and kill programs on computers, which are considered the lowest level, the least popular of computer use by children. And he said you could have the same gains for much less money by putting some tutors into classrooms and things like that. So there's very little evidence of significant gain academically, but the cost is so great that what's happening now is that many subjects are being eliminated from schools. So one is losing music, one is losing art. There was a recent article that 1 in 4 children no longer have physical education in this country because of lack of funding. Librarians are telling us about the cutbacks on book acquisitions. And yet billions are flowing in through a different doorway called computers and technology in the schools. A wonderful example was just given to me by a friend last weekend. He's a physicist and uses computers a lot in his work. But he decided with his boys that he wanted them to have a very imaginative and artistically creative childhood and held them off from the computer till age 12. Well, now they're age 20 and 22 and have been offered millions of dollars for some games that they've created online. Because once they got started on computers, they were very quick to learn it and very creative in using it. And they declined this offer because they didn't want to work for somebody else. They wanted to do this on their own. And we said, well, are they computer majors in college? And the father said, no. Mm-mm. You know, literature, humanities, political science, social policy, they're just interested in the world. And those are the stories that we're hearing again and again from parents who did hold back on computers with their children, gave the children a chance to develop their own innate capacities all through preschool and even into elementary school. And then when they get onto the computer, they learn it very quickly.
What's too much computer use, Joan?
Well, the things that I would look for if, you know, if, let's say an elementary child was using the computer are the sorts of things that, that story that you told of the boy who in a way stops relating to family and is lost in the computer. I'd look at, is the computer getting in the way of creative play for the child, where the child can just, out of himself or herself, come to their own stories, their own imaginations? What about artistic work? We've heard from so many art teachers that once the children start doing art on the computer, they don't trust their own art anymore. They don't want to draw. You know, those are things I would look for. But again and again, I would look at the social. You know, does the child want to play with other children, you know, outside the computer room or not? You know, does the child want to relate to the parents or not? Children, by their nature, love to be with other children, most of them, and love to be with family. But the computer can really get in the way of that.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion of kids and computers.
The excellent new book, Parents as Mentors, by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is a practical guide to bringing out the abilities in your child. Parents as Mentors is available at all bookstores.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Benson Forman and Ms. Joan Allman about computers and kids.
I want to raise another issue about children who aren't people, who are quieter, who keep more to themselves. In earlier generations, those children played the piano or read a book or wrote in a journal. Instead, now they get on the computer, I guess.
Right. Yes, and I think that, you know, parents have always been challenged with children like that, just like they're challenged with the children who always want to be social and never have any downtime. The challenge is, you know, how much is too much? And it's fine that some children love to read or love to draw or love to play the piano. That's, you know, that's their nature. That's right for them. But if you let it go to an extreme where they become unable to socialize, then in a way we're building a certain disability into the child's life. So one is always looking for the right balance. And I would say it's the same thing with computers as it is in other areas of life.
So hard being a parent.
It's so hard.
I'll have a kid come into my office and the parents are concerned because he's socially withdrawn and he's on the computer all the time. And they're saying to you, why don't you call up your friends to get together? Why don't you call up your friends? And really, for some of these kids, they really don't have the skills to know, well, what am I going to do when the kid comes over? They can't really organize themselves. And for some of those kids, you need really the parents to help structure activities. So it's not like, gee, well, go call up your friend, invite him over, and then you leave the kids to their own devices. For some of those kids, they really need help developing some structures.
They need suggestions, and they also need, do you want to bring another friend with us when we go to play miniature
or,
golf
right,
or whatever
or go bowling
is.
Or whatever it's going to be. In other words, they create activities or the parents watching, not necessarily with them, so they're doing a board game for a certain period of time. You invite them down for a snack. So you help sequence it until they can actually learn the skills to do the various activities. The other thing that I would mention is that, you know, I think one of the things that parents need to be monitoring or paying attention to, and I think it bears on the issue of how much computer use is going on, is looking, how connected are we as a family? Like, are we all in the house, but, you know, one child is upstairs on the computer and the other kid is down by the TV and a third kid is playing Nintendo. Well, is it, and they say, gee, we're all together on Sunday morning. Right. We're all in the house together. But, you know, what is the feeling of connectedness within the family? And my feeling is that it behooves the parents to really, they have to work. It's not something that just comes by virtue of having a family. We don't suddenly become cohesive and connected and a real family by virtue of having children. It's something we have to create. And so we have to be thinking, how do we come together and bring ourselves together? And my feeling is that as you create a family culture, as the family begins to come together, I think the interest and inclination to move off towards these more solo activities for extended period of times decreases because the child then says, gee, I want to be hanging out where the action is, where we're playing games together.
Now, what about when a child who's a computer person has a kid come over and both of those kids, having the connection of a computer, want to sit and play computer games together where they're doing it together?
Well, again, you know, I think the difficulty with that kind of activity is that what's happening is the interaction is going towards this external object, this screen, and it's not about them interacting or engaging with each other. At most, it's like, it's my turn. But it doesn't allow, again, for this creative or elaborative or imaginative play. You know, when you're playing a computer game and it's like, okay, we have to, I don't know, capture the gold or kill off all the soldiers to get to the princess. I mean, it's a repetitive action. It's one activity. It's the same thing. There's not a lot of room for elaboration or imagination. I don't really have a problem with kids being involved in aggressive activity. You know, we play, you know, Who's King on the Mountain? Kids, you know, they develop their pecking order. But in this one game, it's one repetitive action. There's really no expansion or creativity in that.
So it's up to us as parents to say, you know, there are other things you could be doing together.
Now, I would say, though, again, you know, I don't come down hard and fast on this. You know, if we have two kids who are kind of awkward, who both have social difficulties, I think it may be that as a warm-up, they may spend 15 minutes or a half hour on computer. But then the parents need to come and say, okay, guys, let's think of something else. Again, here's where the child may need the support of the parent to come in and help them generate other ideas, to help them expand out what their options are.
But one thing I'd like to add to that is that I think the parent needs to see, is it really a warm-up? Or does the playing on the computer actually stifle the child's own imagination for the next round of games? Because that's one of the things that we've seen so often in children with television, for instance, that they watch television for a while and they're usually less able to play afterwards than they were before the television. Mm-hmm. And my guess is something of the same will happen with computers, that they're less able to draw on their own imagination after half an hour of playing the games than they would be before. So one has to just see.
I think it's a balancing act question. I agree. I think that sometimes with the television or with the computer games, there is a loss of initiative because, again, it's so hand-fed to you.
Right.
It's just spoon-fed, you know, and there's nothing you have to do. It really requires minimal activity.
We want to ask both of you, what happens in many homes today? Of course, there's a computer somewhere. Where should it be? Who makes the rules? The kids, the parents? How do you make the rules? We'd like some input. Mm.
Well, most people will say it should not be in the child's bedroom, especially not, you know, in the earlier part of life, maybe in high school if a youngster has shown that they can seriously use it, you know, for study, that's a different thing. But in the elementary grades, if you're going to let a child be on the computer, most parents will say they found it was much better to have it in the living room or the family room, someplace where they can keep an eye on what's going on. Though I spoke with one mother last week who said with her 12-year-old daughter, you know, as soon as she comes in the room, it looks like the daughter's working on homework. But she's pretty sure that a minute before she was emailing to her friends or, you know, doing something else. Even when it's in the family room, you shouldn't assume that you always know what's going on. And, you know, this has to fit into a healthy relationship with your child where there's trust and there's communication. But I think most parents have found it's a lot better to have the computer be visible to them.
I would agree. I think really putting it in the family room is probably a good place to put it, where there's a chance that you might pull the child away from the computer in the child's wish to connect with the parents or the siblings who are around, so that you're creating a space that's going to be attractive to the child. So suddenly the computer becomes less of a desirable object. I think ultimately all kids by nature, even those kids who are more inward turning, I think all kids wish for a connection with their parents, with their siblings. We all want that. Sometimes that process goes awry. But I think that in that wish to make connection with their parents, with their siblings, with their peers, I think if we can foster that piece, then the computer becomes a little less attractive. And I think by having it in the family room, there's a chance, you know, if we're giving the time attending to our children, then suddenly that becomes a less attractive alternative. Although, I will say, for some kids, you know, the question of, well, what kind of rules should we set? You know, with some kids, you have to set rules on how many sweets they can have. Can they have ice cream or not have ice cream? You can only have one serving a day. With some kids, it's not an issue. You know, they have ice cream when they want it, and they don't eat too much of it because they have a natural kind of balance. Again, I think the issue around computer rules fits into the larger context of, you know, how are these kids spending the time? If the kids are naturally inclined towards connecting with friends, with family, it may not be such a problem to have the computer in the room. If we have a high school student who does his homework and needs a quiet space where there's not a lot of action. So for that child who tends not to abuse a computer, I think having the computer in his room is probably not such a difficulty.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion of kids and computers.
For an audio cassette copy of Any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Benson Foreman and Ms. Joan Allman about computers and kids. So how do you come up with rules for a family, particularly when you first bring a computer into the home or make it accessible?
I guess my own feeling about that is, you know, in the best of all situations, when we're dealing with our children, the less rules we need to put upon them, the better. Hopefully, we discuss it as a family, and, you know, the rules we set as a family are part of our larger family culture, family values.
Joan, would you tell us a little bit about the Alliance for Childhood?
I'd be glad to. We got started about 2 years ago. A group of doctors, psychologists, psychiatrists, professors, child development experts, teachers, all of us had a similar set of concerns. First of all, we had a deep love for children and for their healthy development, but the concerns had to do with the greater stress we were seeing in children over these last 20 years or so. And it was manifesting in hyperactive disorders and depression and, you know, medication. Millions of children are now being medicated for these conditions. We're also seeing a lot more asthma and allergies in children and increasing autism in children and violence in children. And it seemed that every decade was bringing a new wave of difficulties. And we took as a first focus the issue of computers because we felt it was a very timely one. Computers had come in very strongly. And we're probably about to go through a big escalation. And we felt there was a message that needed to go out there before the amount of time children spend on computers doubles or triples, as it very well may in the next few years, given certain recommendations coming from the government and so on. So we wanted to talk with the experts, read the books, summarize the research that's out there, and share with parents that this is not the picture that the advertising world gives about computers. That, as I said before, there's very little gain academically. There are a lot of concerns emotionally and socially, and there's a lot of concerns about health issues. And that was actually one of the things that got me started on this issue, was a big Washington Post article a couple years ago about a very wonderful 17-year-old who had been in my nursery kindergarten for a couple years before. And now at 17 in high school, had such severe carpal tunnel syndrome that he could no longer write, couldn't hold a pencil or a pen. There had to be an aide taking notes every day next to him, and he was only allowed on the computer 15 minutes a day. It's a growing problem in children, and it usually doesn't show up until they've been on computers for 5 or 10 years, which has led one neurologist in Baltimore who works on this condition to say that she is seeing a time bomb that's ready to go off, meaning many, many youngsters displaying these problems because they've been online now for 5 or 10 years and the problems are coming up. We talked to a health official at MIT last year who said there are now 150 students on campus registered as having this as a disability. But we're equally concerned with what constitutes the healthy essentials of childhood. You know, the nurturing that children need from their families and their community, as well as a strong emphasis on creativity and play and the arts and physical education and, you know, movement and hands-on activities with gardening and nature exploration and all the things that just children thrive with. And so much of that is now being displaced by the time and money that's going into computer use.
I guess one of the things that we have read is when parents decide about the rules for computer use and how much time kids should spend on a computer is, what is it replacing?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Are there any issues that we've left out?
Yes. One issue that parents have made me very aware of since we issued our report in September is that there are many people, in fact, some online surveys show that over half of the people who responded agreed with our concerns. But parents are saying, we have not had the courage to go to our schools and say, we want less technology, not more technology. And I think if parents are concerned about the amount of time their children are spending on computers, they need to communicate that to the teachers and the principals.
For some kids, actually, the computer can be helpful. We have certain kids that I've seen who may have fine motor difficulties, writing difficulties, or organizing difficulties. And for some of those kids, and I'm saying not at an early age, I'm not talking about first, second, third grade, but I'm saying as they get into sixth grade, eighth grade, 10th grade, that the use of the computer can be helpful because for those kids, the act of actually writing, using their hands and doing writing, can take up so much energy that it slows down their thinking processes. So for some of those kids, being able to write on the computer and having keyboarding skills allows their thinking to keep up with their writing.
We want to ask each of you if you have suggestions for parents with regard to resources they can consult about their children's use of computers.
Well, I'd like to tell the parents about our own website, which may sound like a funny thing to talk about.
That's a good idea.
This way, but we have a very different view of computers with adults than we do with children. And we have a website that's called Alliance for Childhood, all one word, .net. And on it, you'll find the full report, which we issued in September, called Fool's Gold, A Critical Look at Computers in Childhood. And also a position statement that's been signed by over 80 people, most of them experts in their various fields of education, medicine, and child development, who are all very concerned about these issues of children and computers. So those can be read online. They can be downloaded, or they can call us at in Maryland at 301-513-1777 or write to us at Post Office Box 444, College Park, Maryland, 20741. Shall I repeat it all? Glad to.
In case people don't have their pencils right handy.
Right. The website is allianceforchildhood.net. Phone number 301-513-1777. And the address, Alliance for Childhood, Post Office Box 444, College Park, Maryland, 20741. There's some wonderful books also that parents would probably enjoy reading, and they are Failure to Connect by Jane Healy, a great educator and writer about children's development, and The Child and the Machine by Alison Armstrong and Charles Casement. They are Canadian journalists and researchers who have looked into this whole problem of children and computers. And both books detail research that's out there as well as anecdotal experiences of visiting schools and what they're seeing, and raise concerns in a number of different areas that I think parents will want to know about before they kind of, you know, give way to this tremendous tidal wave that's called computers in childhood.
Okay, well, I hate to say that we have run out of time, so we have to give way to our time constraints here. But we're grateful to both Dr. Benson Foreman and Ms. Joan Allman, our guests today. Thanks so very much for helping us
with
these issues.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Parents as Mentors. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573. And tell us what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's fun to know what station you're tuning in from. Parents as Mentors is available at all major bookstores and on the web. For an audio cassette copy of any Parents Perspective show, just send a $5 check or money order to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015. That's Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
It's very important to us to hear from our listeners. How is Parents Perspective helpful to you? You can email us at parentsper@aol.com. That's parentsper@aol.com. Or you can write to us at our post office box. Again, that's P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015. To learn more about us and our book, Parents as Mentors, visit our website through our shortcut address. There are no W's. It's a shortcut. http://i.am/parentsperspective, all one word. http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.